Yeah.
Check it out.
See, the only thing you need to do right here is snarl your freaking head.
Yeah, boy, it's July 21st, and it's episode 173, and this is the Fantasy Football Auctioneer Podcast. The Fantasy Football Auctioneer Podcast is the official podcast of thefantasyfootballauction.com, the internet's only website dedicated to fantasy football auctions. We got a great show for you tonight. Tonight, we have the one and only Matt Harmon on the air with us from Yahoo Fantasy Sports. He's going to be on the podcast with us tonight, so we're going to be talking lots of wide receiver, and, well, they'll probably go lots of other places too, because I actually have Blister in the same room with me tonight, so I'm sure things will get a little bit goofy. So that's our show tonight, our show for tonight. We're recording this on a Saturday. We'll release it on a Saturday, so it's a little bit early for us as normal, Blister. But of course, our experts are always here. Well, they're not always here. There's always just one of us lately. So my big intro for you, Blister, tonight is he's getting his bag packed for the 10th annual all-boys golf trip. The tee times are booked now. The question is, do you have all the cheat sheets ready for the first ever fantasy football draft at the golf trip?
We are set, man. I can't wait to get out of town and golf. Actually, I just can't wait to get out of town. I like golf, obviously, but I have a feeling it's going to go bad. But at least we'll be getting out of town. We have some company in right now, so sooner we go, the better.
And that's why you're over here recording today.
I wanted to come over it.
And taking Slim's place today, like I said, is one and only Matt Harmon. He's outside of Scott Fish, probably the busiest name in fantasy football I hear out there right now. I was actually going to wear my Scott Fish shirt today, but then I realized we don't have the cameras on, Blister, so yeah, it didn't really have a whole lot to do. But you know him. He's Mr. Reception Perception. He's contributed to the ultimate draft kit by the Fantasy Footballers. He's formerly of NFL.com, and now he's with Yahoo Fantasy. So like I said, outside of Scott Fish, he's probably the most talked about name out there in fantasy football. Matt, how's it going tonight?
Oh, guys, it's going good here, man. Like, just happy to be rearing up for the coming season. It does feel like every year it kind of sneaks up on you, and right around this time is when the tidal wave comes and hits you and just takes you under for the next, 5 months. You pop up in January and you're like, where the hell, what happened? Yeah, yeah. What happened here? But I'm looking forward to it, man. And thank you guys so much for having me on tonight. You know, we were talking before we started recording. I think the last time I was on your guys' podcast was when I was just about to go to NFL.com, and it's like so much has happened since then. So, but happy to always chat with you guys, and especially talk about auctions.
Yeah, happy to have you on. So, tell us a little bit about what's going on over at Yahoo right now.
Yeah, kind of a whirlwind last couple weeks. You know, you start a new job. I started July 9th, so 2 Mondays ago. And you know, you start a new job, you meet a bunch of new people and forget a bunch of names that you should probably remember. It's been great so far though. Definitely different environment than what I was coming from at NFL.com, but one that I really feel at home at. You know, there's just a lot of freedom to kind of do what you want to do. And the role that I'm in, I'm doing a lot on our social media side, trying to grow the voice there, put more of a face to Yahoo Fantasy or Yahoo Sports in general. Yeah. They've sent me to a lot of different events. You know, they sent me to interview Antonio Brown last week. Then they sent me to the ESPYs to interview, a ton of different athletes. It's a lot of fun. And then this next weekend, I'll be up at Cowboys training camp here in Oxford, California. So getting to do a lot of different stuff, and it's been a lot of fun. And, we're talking before we started recording, like I've been doing so much. I haven't even written a piece yet. I'm hoping to have my tears coming out, not crying tears, but ranking tears coming out in the next couple of weeks here at Yahoo. So it's been a lot of fun, and I'm just excited to see what the season's going to look like.
Hey, Matt, I got a couple quick Yahoo questions for you. One, with some pull in there now, you should get them to open up their daily fantasy to Canadians. And that's not really a question. Brad Evans, I think I read one time, was in the teaching business as well, like Uncle Buckets and I, and actually Slim too, but he was wise and got out. How long did he teach? Do you know anything about, along that line?
I don't know that. And I'll say to the DFS part of it, I'll do what I can. But it's
there you go. Well, we're saying before the air, yeah, you were just going to .com before. And, I remember we thought it was pretty cool because we are just three guys that have summers off because we're in education and thinking, wow, like this guy's actually going to go do this for a living. Like I can't imagine now you probably thought that at that time. And now you're interviewing Antonio Brown. Like that's got to be.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild, right? Like, and it's just funny because with these guys, like talking to him, you know, when I interviewed him, it was for to promote like the fact that he was going to be on the Madden cover. So the day before, he was taking a bunch of interviews in this hotel or whatever he was at. And so, you know, I go in there and I introduce myself. He and I kind of briefly knew of each other because when he was, or when I was at NFL.com doing a lot of work with like the next gen stats, we would give some of that data to his social media person and then, you know, they would kind of post it for him. Oh, yeah. So he followed me and was like, you know, looked at some of my tweets and all that stuff. So I told him who I was and what I was working with that. So we talked about that for a little bit and he goes, and I was like, how's everything going with this? And he's like, so boring, man. Like I'm just, he's like, people are just asking, you know, the same questions over and over again. So these, you know, these guys they're funny when you like interact with them like that. And you just kind of, and I'm like, yeah, this does seem like it would suck. Like having to answer like, how does it feel to be on the Madden cover? And, you know, exactly. Like how many times can you say, yeah, it's pretty cool or whatever.
Yeah.
So I tried to make that interview fun for him. There's a video I posted on my Instagram page and I don't know that it's been tweeted out yet, but, if you go, it's under the same handle, my Instagram page. It's me chatting with him about, like whether I could, because, you know, he has these really eccentric hairstyles. So we were talking about whether if we swapped hair, who would look better. So, you know, I'm trying to have fun with them with those sort of conversations.
Geez, and you know, and we're sitting here thinking this morning, man, we got Matt Harmon on our show. And then you're like, man, I get to interview Antonio Brown. So we're different stages in our careers, Buster.
That's great to have.
Anyways, we should get into talking some auction here, Matt. So if you guys are ready, then I'm ready. Let's cock the hammer. It's time for action. So like I said, we've got Matt Harmon on the show. We're going to talk a little wide receiver. We're going to figure out where he's at right now and some of the trends that he's seeing. First of all, I just want to quickly mention that, Matt, I don't know if you're aware of this. Our listeners are because we're getting flooded with emails, but we have a mock auction draft contest going on. So what it is we've got guys who are doing mocks and they're sending us the results so that we can use that as part of our data to come up with our average auction values. So Slim and Blister are always mocking, but we're doing some crowdsourcing now, Matt. We got the fans sending in their results, so we have a bigger number. Kind of that idea, like DLF doing their monthly draft. So it's kind of a cool thing for us, Matt.
Nice. It sounds like a great thing.
So so they're sending in the results. You send in your results to auctionmockdraft@gmail.com. And every time you send them in, we'll put your name in a hat for a free membership to the website. So you send in the results, you get a name in. So we'll draw today's name, Blister, from the hat. And, today's winner, and I'll send you an email, is Nick Vicia. I probably screwed that up too, but, he also sent me an email with a question, Blister, and he called himself Vex on there. So we'll just call him Vex. I'm Vex and he's Vex. So Vex, congratulations. I'll send you an email with a link to get yourself a free membership to the site. So anybody else, we'll be doing more of these draws next week. So keep the entries coming. Thanks. Thanks, Nick. And I'll send out a email to you after the show is done. All right. So typically we... Matt, we'll go through a couple of Twitter questions and then we'll get into the meat of it. So this particular segment we call We Just Got a Letter.
We just got a letter. We just got a letter. We just got a letter. Wonder who it's from.
And now, yeah, I just played some cheesy Blue's Clues music, Matt. So I don't know. It, you know what? It actually dun, 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 like that part works pretty good. And then it's polarizing on the podcast apps, on the comments. It's polarizing the Blue's Clues, which is good.
Yeah. Get people talking. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
I like Timmy Trumpet when the Guru Elite plays that on. Maybe a little bit more, but whatever.
So we'll bounce this off of both of you guys. So the first Twitter question is from at PD Argy. And he's asking this, it's a 10 team, .5 or half point PPR. He's in a dino startup. It's kind of that time of year. One quarterback, two running backs, two receivers, a tight end, a flex, and 16 on the bench. So he's wondering, and Blister, I'll throw it out to you first, and then Matt, you can follow up. What do you think of a budget breakdown, Blister, for a league like this?
Well, since it's a dino startup, I think probably where I want to invest most of my money is in my starting two receivers. He's only got two wide receivers that are starting, two running backs, like you mentioned. I never go too heavy at quarterback and tight end, and the 16 bench spots, you know, I might allot $25 for that, but I'm assuming it's a $200 cap. I would go almost maybe as high as $100 to get two pretty studly wide receiver ones if I could that are young and have youth. You might not be able to get two for $100. But what I look at that in terms from running back is there's a lot of good young running backs this year that aren't going to cost you $50, $60. Right. You could even go after Joe Mixon or even still Jordan Howard, but or some of the rookies that are coming out this year for quite a bit cheaper, plus they're young and they're going to have a little more shelf life, and the running back shelf life typically isn't that much. So spending a pile of money on an older running back doesn't make any sense. So I'd gamble going a little bit younger, spend the core of my money on an elite wide receiver or two like Antonio Brown we were just talking about, or maybe even Devontae Adams. He's young. And build my team around that.
There you go. Matt, are you doing any dino startups right now?
Yeah, I haven't done any dynasty startups this year. Well, other than just a few mocks. Definitely haven't done any auction dynasty startups. But, well, go ahead.
Feedback here for PD Dargy, as far as what you would be doing to break down that draft.
Yeah, so I try to never go into any auction with like a very strict like this is what I'm going to allocate to each position, because I think that's the fun of auctions is that they really make you be nebulous with your strategy, because they can change so quickly. Unlike with a redraft league, and I mean I don't have to give this stump speech to you guys because obviously you're doing an auction podcast. You know what the hell this is all about. But like with it, it's unlike a regular redraft league where it's like, you know, if you got the 10th pick, you kind of know like what 2-3 guys you're going to be picking from there. With an auction, you could end up with anybody. So that's why I always try to be really flexible with the like, what am I going to allocate to each position? But I'm with you in the fact that since it's a dynasty startup, I would definitely like to secure two of those really good locked in young wide receivers. And despite the fact that, you know, everybody's talking about running backs and like this resurgence of it, there's definitely a lot of good quality depth at the wide receiver position. So you could potentially allocate, you know, the $100 if it's a $200 budget to those two young stud receivers and maybe even end up, you know, with a discount, really good number three young wide receiver. There's just a lot of depth at that position when you go through ADP boards. Definitely not prioritizing quarterback at all. I know there's still some thought that you want to get, you know, some of these sexy young names, like even a Patrick Mahomes or a Mitch Trubisky because it's dynasty, but you can putz around at the end of a dynasty auction and get, you know, like $1, $2, $5 values at that quarterback position. You know, your Matt Ryans, your Phillip Rivers, these guys that nobody really wants, they'll still be easy to pluck up. The running back position is tough in a spot like this, because there's definitely going to be veteran discounts. There's definitely going to be some young rookie discounts. And the hardest part for me though is, you know, I mentioned I don't want to spend up at all at quarterback. Tight end, I get a little, I gotta admit,
a little excited.
Yeah, I get a little excited with some of these guys like Kelsey, and you know, not the Gronk tier, because you're probably going to have to pay too much in an auction, and it just it's going to throw off the rest of your strategy a little bit there. But the second tier guys, you know, the Ertz, the Kelseys, Evan Ingram, maybe, even if you're not super high on any of them this year for one reason or another, it feels really good to lock in that tight end position with a guy that you know is going to cross that 100 target barrier, because it's just such a mess elsewhere. And it's a tough position. Yeah, I know this personally in a dynasty league. Like I spent 3 years just, you know, trying to make chicken salad out of chicken, you know what. at that tight end position, and it was just awful until finally you hit on that first, like I hit on a first round tight end in Evan Ingram, and I feel really good about the position now, but that doesn't happen very often. We know that rookie drafts are hard to hit that tight end position. Sometimes they take so long. So in a dynasty auction startup, I think I would probably try to eschew the tight end position, but it is the toughest one, I think, to not, you know, throw out my budget plans for, yeah. I would say.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's just a quagmire after that second group. Like, I mean, tight end 6 through 16 is the same guy, right? So if you're not going to get one of those top guys, just sit on it is the way I kind of – look at it too. But does a 0.5 point per reception, like a half point, does that change your strategy at all going into that, Matt?
Well, as we know, it's Yahoo's standard scoring now. So obviously I'm all about that. I'm all about that. Definitely it changes things a little bit because you don't get that full point per reception boost where in a straight just PPR, I think then I'm really trying to hammer that wide receiver position and then knowing that you can make up it's almost like a little bit of a cheat code in the way that you can just throw those pass catching running backs into your starting spot. And at least, you know, your Gio Bernard's, your Chris Thompson's, that mold, you're getting some sort of a floor there, whereas that doesn't exist as much in a half point PPR and you'd like to get some more touchdown scorers. But in general, I try to just go with the best positional strategy and not focus too much on the scoring setting system unless it's a, you know, something that really changes it drastically, like a super flex or a tight end premium or something like that. So I try to not get too lost on that. Like, all right, let me focus on more touchdown scores. But, and the half point I do think kind of balances things out a little bit.
Yeah. And I'd like to give a shout out to PD Argy there too. I think auction dino startup would be the way to do it because then you can construct your team however you want. If you're going to keep the team forever, doing it auction allows you to really, you know, beat by your own drum that way. And if you want to go wide receiver heavy, then you can. And the next guy can, you know, take Kelsey and Ertz and mold his team around that and whatever it is. So I think the auction definitely in a dino startup is a great way to go.
I think that snake dynasty, like dynasty startups are kind of boring, man. Like I've done a handful over the years and I promise I'm not just preaching propaganda because this is your podcast.
we don't mind it though. That's fine if you are, but
yeah. Right. But I think they always go pretty much the same way. You know, like these young stud receivers go really high. A few running backs get mixed in. Then it's like that tier of, you know, kind of value, like every veteran is a value. They fall and you can really construct kind of a very similar sort of roster. I think the startup auction brings a different element to it and it really forces owners to kind of take stands on how they think they should build a dynasty roster. If you really are veteran heavy, you can't just necessarily rely on, oh, they're going to be in a couple rounds. I could pick up my Larry Fitzgeralds and those guys. Like you got to put the money to it as well. So I like that and you just got to have like a committed ownership group because, you know, a dynasty startup like auction, that's going to probably take like 5 hours. So,
that's a good investment.
it's much more of an enjoyable experience. And I think just like I said, it makes people take a stand on how they think team building should go.
Yeah, definitely in that dino. And I just even was thinking in the Scott Fishbowl, I was so excited for the first couple of rounds. And then I'm like, oh, it just – even in Scott Fish with the alternate scoring and all that, it still tends to be kind of chalk there in the middle, right? Like you just kind of got to go with whoever's on the top of the list, even with that scoring. You drafted Scott Fish, eh, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely.
And how'd your team look? We just finished yesterday.
Really?
It was pretty good. I tweeted it out. Like, you know, it's a tough league to feel like great about because, you know, with the fourth, like fifth round, it's kind of starts to get a little nebulous. And I think you just got to focus on like positional value with that league. So I really went with just kind of like safer running backs that might not have the highest upside or whatever. And then with receivers, I tried to get a little more lottery tickets and guys that I think could outkick their ADP because then I'm just kind of like, okay, I'm not going to try to chase like receivers on the waiver wire in Scott Fishbowl because it's just a nightmare. Yeah. Like most of those guys have been plucked up and we know historically that
and they're sharks.
Yeah. There's so many good players that know how to spend their budgets. And like, there's probably going to be like maybe one to two good receivers that come off the waiver wire in that sort of format with all those teams. And if you don't get them, then you're kind of screwed. So I wanted to feel secure at receiver and then hopefully chase some waiver wire running back values. And in the way that I would go with that at the quarterback position, because it's super flex, yeah. I got three guys: Patrick Mahomes, Eli Manning, and Andy Dalton. And the good thing about those guys, even if I'm not like, I'm not in love with Dalton and Manning, I know they're not going to get benched. You know, right. Like, I know I'm not going to probably, you know, you never know what's going to happen. But those three guys, I think, are probably going to start 16 games this year. And then I'm not going to be chasing quarterbacks at the Scott Fishbowl waivers. Yeah. Like, I really tried to think about how this is going to play for me on the waiver wire. And I think that influenced my draft strategy a lot.
Yeah, no, that's good thinking. I ended up with Eli as one of my quarterbacks too. Ugh, I wasn't pumped about that, but it's like, well, what do? I was chasing value at wide receiver too. And so I thought, well, I'll just wait one more round. One more round hurt.
Yeah. It's always tough when you try to wait.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So let's go on to the next question here. This is, at Vinny Say. Similar type of question, I guess, so it may not take too long to get through it. Being in a larger league, there's definitely an advantage to getting an elite running back or an elite wide receiver on your team, he says. This year, which would you say is more valuable? So, Matt, what do you think, are you elite wide receiver or elite running back?
Well, I think that generally what I'd like to do is build wide receiver heavy teams, but have like one really secure top end RB1 there. So not right. necessarily a zero running back strategy, but definitely kind of like almost a one running. That's the way I've drafted, I think, for the last few years. And I think the way, at least tried to, you know, lock in that, like, I love taking David Johnson at like the fifth pick in snake drafts right now, because I think he's got just such an incredible, if you do like just straight up projections, I mean, he's going to have a ton of touches, you know, whether it's through the air, whether it's on the ground. I love locking in a player like that. And then in that second, third, fourth round, I just feel a lot better about some of the receiver options than I do some of these running back options. Yeah. And it's the same way if you approach it from an auction standpoint as well, and then try to pluck up, you know, some veteran running backs. And again, I'm trying to think this year so much more about how my teams are not just going to look when I leave the draft room or leave the auction room, but how they're going to look in season. And again, it's just much easier to try to chase running backs on the waiver wire than it is wide receivers on the waiver wire or any other position. I mean, tight end we talked about is a mess as always. So I really want to lock in my receivers and then kind of leave my running back position open to committees and chaos, because we know that's how the NFL season's going to go. Like, backfields turn over all the time. So that's kind of been my general approach this year.
All right. Blister, what about you? Which one do you think is more valuable, the elite RB or elite YR? Or well, WR, sorry.
I think, obviously, I'd like to have one of each. But if I had to target one, I actually think there's a little more depth at our RB1 this year. So I might target the wide receiver one. Sorry.
Yeah.
Too many letters. But I mean, I'm looking at my tiers, and I almost have, between the first two tiers, there's 10 guys that are considered RB1 easily. So if that's almost your full first round, if you went all running back. And that means when I look at my receivers, I'm not as sold on. I got about five guys. Like, I have Brown, Hopkins, Thomas, Keenan Allen, and Devontae Adams. And after that, I have question marks with a lot of them. Even Odell. I'm not a huge fan, but there's five there. I mean, if you counted Odell, that's six. Well, so that means that group is a little smaller than this RB1 stud.
Yeah.
So I might have to target the wide receiver one stud first.
Okay. Well, and I think I'm kind of leaning some of that too, but I like the way Matt said it too. You can go in with that flexibility into your draft because, I think you got to lock up one of those you got to get an elite guy. You're not going to be able to just,
I did that. I mean,
the $35 guys.
One year I remember going into our auction with kind of a balanced budget, and I was just disappointed. You know, you needed that. I made a note after it was over and after the season went, you need to stud at these positions. You know, you can't just operate on mediocrity, right? So I always try to get that now.
All right. So that's the Twitter questions. If you have Twitter questions, hit us up on Twitter at Fantasy Auction. The guys will answer questions there, and then we'll also post some of them on the show. If, like some of our listeners, your question is too long for Twitter, Or, like we've heard, you don't want your league mates listening to your or your questions and seeing your advice. You can email us. We are footballauctioneer@gmail.com. So you can hit us up both of those ways, and we get it out to Slim and Blister right away. And the answers usually come fast and furious. I even had a Facebook question the other day. Wow. Yeah, from a guy from Thunder Bay. And we were talking to the 2QB guy. He's from Thunder Bay. It was a small world, Matt, where we're like in northwestern Ontario, if that means anything to you. We're just across the border from Minnesota, International Falls, Minnesota, to be exact.
Yeah.
And Thunder Bay is a close city to us at a 3.5-hour drive, like, because we're really in the middle of nowhere. And so to hear that there's a actual, like, a verified guy on Twitter that is from Thunder Bay was pretty mind-blowing for us. I was listening to the Bull Rush, and he was on there. So,
oh, are you talking about Sal?
Yeah.
Dude, Sal's my boy. Yeah, you should. You guys should get together. He's, like, the greatest human.
Really, hey? Sounded pretty cool on the pod. Yeah, no, he's from Thunder Bay, so it was it was kind of a cool thing. So I tweeted at him, and we're neighbors. So he's in Thunder Bay for the summer, he said. And I love the story that he sends fantasy football advice in the pizza boxes at his parents' pizzeria.
Yeah, yeah. Sal is the first guy that ever, like, when I first started writing back, I've told the story on other podcasts and everything like that, but, like, he's the guy who, when I first started blogging just, you know, on Backyard Banter about 5 years ago now, trying to get noticed, trying to, you know, become a football writer or whatever, he was the first person that ever read some of my work and shared it and told me that I was good and, like, inspired me really to keep and was, like, my first mentor really in this business. And I would definitely not be doing what I'm doing right now if it wasn't for Sal. And he hasn't just done that for me. He does that for everybody. He's so grateful with his time and the way he promotes people and inspires people. So yeah. And I got a chance to meet him when he was out here, in LA for, when he was at Universal Studios or whatever with his family. So I got to meet up with him in real life, which was a real awesome experience. Cause like I said, he's done so much for me. So yeah, you guys should hang out with him. He's the best.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. Cause I was listening to Bull Rush and Scott Fish. He's from Minneapolis, right? Yeah. Which to us feels local, even though it's a 5-hour drive south of here. We're in the middle of nowhere. So if you can drive somewhere, then that's considered local for us. And, to hear someone was from Thunder Bay, it blew my mind. I'm wondering, there was that guy that played Debbie in the brewery there too, Sleeping Giant. I wonder if they got good connections there too. That Sleeping Giant brewery, the guy played Debbie and it blew my mind. He's a brewmaster and a Debbie player. I thought, wah! I didn't want to leave the place. You know what I mean? Anyways, okay. So, speaking, you just talked a little bit about, you know, your years going back, Matt. That's what I was trying to say. What's your history with auction?
Yeah, done a handful of auction drafts, over the years and done some, like I said, done some dynasty startups in the past, have done some just regular old traditional redraft mocks, mocks and actual regular play the league out auctions. And, you know, it's a fun platform, man. It's a fun way to change it up because, you know, when you're like me and you're in the industry and you're doing this as your job, or even if you just want to, you know, these sickos, and I say that in a nice way, like we all are sickos for fantasy.
Absolutely.
And you do, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of drafts, whether it's best ball leagues or just redraft leagues. It gets stale after a while, and auction is a nice way to kind of change that up. I think my favorite auction I ever did was a Roto-World draft, like a bunch of the guys from there and, you know, people like me and JJ Zacharys and other guys. And it was so competitive and it took so long. That's the one thing about auctions is it does take like 4 hours to do one if you really got a lot of people. And there was it was like a best ball dynasty startup auction draft. And I won it in the first year by going after guys like we keep bringing up Antonio Brown. I remember I won him for a big chunk of money that year. That was a 2015 season that was all about wide receiver scoring. So I went really hard after that position and won it in the first year. Nice. And it was, you know, that was, I think one of the auctions that I really thought that my plan played out well. I mean, there have been other times that has absolutely not happened. you know, where I've just really gone in with a thought process and it hasn't worked out. And I've learned a lot over the years that you can't really hold on. Like I said earlier, you can't really hold on to like one, this is how it's going to go and I'm going to play it out this way. Just does auctions just don't work that way, but that's part of the challenge and part of the fun.
Yeah. And that's, we always are talking about is being flexible and coming with a few different game plans and knowing when it starts to go one way, what you're going to do and being able to pivot really quick rather than scramble going, oh, I thought that, it was only going to go this way. So we promote that a lot. Hey, Matt. So right now, like you can answer this in two different ways. So either A, as someone in industry, what should our listeners as players be doing right now to get themselves ready for their drafts later on? Or answer it this way, you as a fantasy player, not as a, as an analyst, what are you doing to get yourself ready for drafts? So you can pick which way.
Yeah, it's tough to separate like being a fantasy player and being an analyst for me, yeah. because I mean, it's just like they kind of go hand in hand. Like as
I'm thinking like, you know, what are you doing for your home league or whatever, right? Like you always treat that a little bit different than you're treating everything else as a...
Yeah, I would say for people out there, the thing you got to be doing right now is just, you know, start to pay attention, and start to put that filter on too, because we know that like hype season is coming, man.
It's all happening. Yeah.
Yeah, Rich Rebar from Roto World actually had a really great series of tweets the other day. I think it was just yesterday, kind of going off Robbie Anderson, right. There was a Roto World blurb about how he's expected to explode in 2018. And he was saying that this is the exact type of advice or exact type of blurb that you just need to ignore because it's all based on opinion. It's all based in hyperbole and there's no like actionable information that it provides you. And like putting that filter on right now, I think is the most important thing you can do as a fantasy player or even honestly as an analyst and not getting carried away in your opinion, because I definitely get caught in this. If there's a guy I like, you know, I just mentioned that rich thread that I really liked. Yeah. And then later that night, you know, Mike Clay tweeted out that he was on radio with one of the Jaguars beat writers and the guy was like, oh, I expect Keelan Cole to be the number one wide receiver on the team this year. And I retweeted it. And then I thought to myself, I'm like, why did I do that? That was the exact thing that I just earlier today was like, yeah, it was a really smart thing that I read from Rich, but it's that bias of like, I think Keelan Cole should be the number one receiver on that team. I think he might be the best guy. He's the one I'm kind of most excited about. So it just validated my opinion. And that is the thing as a fantasy player that we really have to try to fight against. Like if it's an analyst that has like a good statistical take on something like, and it's meaningful data, then we should follow that. If it's a beat writer that notices a trend in practice, like this guy's running with the ones or he's getting these reps in passing situations where he hasn't before, you follow that. But if it's just noise and opinion, you got to ignore it. And it's really hard because we all want to be validated. But that, I think, is the most important thing. We can start to try to build those filters up right now as fantasy players and as analysts to get us through the next, you know, 5 to 6 weeks here.
Right. And Blister, and you know, if Matt Harmon tweets something about a receiver, he moves the needle too, right? And then you go, oh, geez, maybe I need to click that link.
Please click the links. That's how I pay the bills.
There you go. Okay. So, Blister, is there anything like you're doing right now? I know you spent like 100 hours driving out to the West Coast and back. So you did a lot of pods, but anything else you're doing right now?
Well, listening to pods, trying to like, gather as much information as I can, but like Matt said, sift through it all and have a filter. And I'm kind of guilty of the same thing, though. If there's a player I like and I might feel that he might do well, and I love hearing good news about that.
Yeah, right.
and if I'm trying to trade a player and I see something like that Robbie Anderson article, then I try to get that out there to everybody to see so that maybe I can make a trade.
Yeah. Use it to your advantage if you can, especially in Dino. So, that mean that for new Dino players, that's something that you got to learn too, is how to feather that news in appropriately. So it's not like you're preaching the propaganda. You're just, gently reminding those players. Speaking of learning stuff too, Matt, is there anything like last year from your drafts that you went, you know what? I got to remember that heading into 2018.
Yeah, that's a good question. You try to think back on what you've learned in the past and everything. I think just I don't know that it's necessarily like a something I've learned just last year, but I feel like I learned over and over again is not to be too overconfident in your player projections.
Yeah.
Like you can be very confident in your stance on a team or your stance on position, like positional value within, you know, you want to hammer those high end running backs or you want to build around wide receivers or you want to go late round quarterback. Like those can all be things that you hold very true to and that sure. you go into every draft prepared with that. I think just individual player projections though, or breakout candidates or whatever, that's tough to do. I think that last year I think that the one thing that I've learned last year, and this isn't something that everybody can do because, you know, you have real lives and real jobs and I don't.
Yeah.
Like I think just doing projections for each team that last year was the first year that I did it. And I want to do it every single year going forward because it really helped me identify guys that not so much guys I wanted to believe in or like I wanted to really chase based on projections, but guys I wanted to avoid. Based on projections. I think the best example last year was Terrell Pryor. Mm-hmm. When I liked him as a player, and I was excited about his landing spot, but not as excited as everybody else. Like if you remember last year, he was, he was like a third round pick by the time redraft leagues were coming up in, the end of August. He was a guy that a lot of sharp analysts were on. And that's tough when you're also in the business and a lot of your, you know, colleagues are really high on a guy and you're like, what am I not seeing? But when I just projected out Washington's offense, I'm like, there's no way that the targets are there. There's no way, you cannot project out this offense, an offense that traditionally spreads the ball around and doesn't funnel through one receiver. It's real tough to get this guy to 120, 130 targets that he would have needed to pay back that top 15 ADP at the wide receiver position. So he was a guy I was clearly off, didn't draft anywhere. And I think that was a place I really profited there because I was able to avoid that landmine simply by doing projections. And again, I know that everybody doesn't have the time to sit out and project the entire league.
Yeah.
That's good. You probably have a social life, which is a good thing for you. But it is a helpful exercise to at least get yourself thinking that way. Even if you don't want to go through the exercise of building out spreadsheets and doing all that, if you just sit there and like just try to mathematically say, okay, I'm going to expect this team to pass about 550 times. How much can I really allocate to one person? And that can really help you avoid a lot of players that other people are being unrealistic about.
Yeah. And it's kind of like what's going on with the Giants this year. You've got, four guys that are going to have 150 targets if you talk to anybody, but then Eli's going to suck. So yeah.
That is great that you bring that up. Like I said that, so this is just a little peel back the curtain about the Yahoo process, like getting hired there. They interviewed me at the end of May when they started kind of recruiting me there, pulling me away from the NFL, wanted to bring me in. So I did an interview there with like four people. The second interview I had, and I remember saying that take there at that interview. Yeah. And like, that was obviously behind closed doors. Wasn't going to go public with it because it's a job interview. And now like everybody's saying that, I'm like, damn it. I should have said, well, at least it helped me get the job, but now everybody is like thinking that way. I'm like, damn, I should have said that. Public.
I'll remember that question when I'm doing interviews next week for teachers. I'll have to.
There you go.
Them, what they think of Giants offense and see how that goes. Elementary school teachers, though, I don't know how many of the women would know that answer.
Yeah, be like, what do you think about the fact that Eli's going at like quarterback 20, but all the receivers are up there like top five in their position? That doesn't make a lot of sense. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? Well, it is a math question. It's like pretty much a math question, basically.
That's right. There you go. Yeah, yeah.
But if they can't answer it, then you're hired.
Then you're hired. Yeah. So looking right now, if that's what you kind of brought in from last year, what about this year? Like, what are some of the trends you're seeing heading into drafts? I know a lot of guys are doing MFLs. I just finished one yesterday. So what are some of the trends you're seeing right now, Matt, moving forward?
Yeah, I'm seeing that obviously I think that the running back being boosted back up is definitely something that you're seeing. I like to have one locked in kind of quote, what you hope for is a superstar player. And I think that the top 8 to 9 at the position. If you look at just, you know, obviously there's Gurley, Bell, Elliott, David Johnson. Those guys are kind of, I think, a clear top four. Then the next tier of guys, Kamara, Barkley, Fournette, Gordon, and Hunt. Those are guys I all feel really good about. But like after that, it kind of becomes very messy. And I have not been investing much in that, in the guys who kind of go in that third round range, especially. Whether you're looking, like, I mean, I'm looking at the fantasy football calculator ADP right now. You know, the third round is like Derrick Henry, LaShawn McCoy, Darius Geis, Jay Ajayi, Rashad Penny. Like, I don't want any of those guys in the third round. So that to me, I think the boosting back up of that position, I think it does create a lot of value at the wide receiver position where there are guys that if you do just, again, do projections, there are guys that I think could get to that 120 target range, which is typically what you're going to want for a top 24 receiver. There's a lot of guys that I could see that projection happening for. So to me, I think that's one trend I've noticed. Just in general, the amount of running backs that I think are going to get targets in the passing game is going up. I think that's an important trend for fantasy because it does just boost up the floor of your running backs. You know, so if you play in a half point PPR league or just a straight up PPR league, that's a really important thing to notice. Like, I just don't want anything to do with these guys who aren't going to play in the passing game. Outside of maybe Jordan Howard, because I think he has a chance to be a big time touchdown scorer. But again, he kind of goes in that range of running backs where I haven't been really looking at the position. So there's the way the league is changing overall, and we don't necessarily have a ton of workhorse running backs or a ton of high volume wide receivers, and the offense is kind of spreading out a little bit more. I think that impacts fantasy through multiple positions. It makes the passing game just all the more profitable in the NFL to try to get multiple options from. And then that just puts the onus on us to understand positions and where they're going to be used in season. I am trying so hard this year. I think, I don't know, again, this is less so of a trend or just more of like my approach. I'm trying so much more to think about when I draft teams. I'm drafting these guys and this whole team together with an eye towards how it's going to go in season, because I think we all get so focused on the draft and the industry that I'm in, you know, the fantasy football industry, it's like, it makes it this way because it's this big event that everybody gets hyped around and it's where all the money pumps in season. Yeah. But it's like one event. It's one leg of the table, and there's so much more to go around to keep the team afloat that I'm trying really hard to think about when I draft the team, how is this going to look and how am I, is going to be deployed in season rather than just, hey, when I tweet this out, how many people are going to tell me what a sick draft I have, you know?
Yeah, right. So when you are drafting, are you seeing like, if based on those kind of trends now, did you have like tiers? Like, cause we're big into, in our auction drafting is drafting tiers, not necessarily players, and then finding the sweet spot in the tier. Are there any tier values like at a running back or at the wide receiver position that you think are good values right now? Like,
yeah.
Where's the hot spot?
So I think I'm going to put out my tiers at Yahoo in the next couple weeks. And I agree with you guys that I think drafting off tiers is one of the best ways to approach a fantasy football just draft, whether it's an auction or just a redraft league, because it gets you into that mindset of what I was talking about before of not drafting like based on who you think is going to be really good, but just trying to nail positional value because our projections are probably going to suck. We're going to be wrong probably, you know, 50% of the time if we're lucky.
Right.
Drafting tiers is definitely a smart way to do it. And I think I think there's just a fall off around that third to fourth, maybe fifth tier even of running backs that I haven't been drafting in that I'm just kind of avoiding. But I like the running back value that scoops back up around the later tiers there. You know, that's where you're getting kind of these Rex Burkheads, CJ Anderson even, Jamal Williams, who I think could, with Aaron Jones suspended over the first two games, you know, he's a guy that could take that backfield and run with it because he's not like a sexy player. Like, I mean, Aaron Jones is, you know, high yards per carry, a guy that breaks a lot of tackles. If you look at it, plenty of efficiency metrics, he's great. But Williams is a guy who consistently gained yardage in his rookie year. It wasn't the most efficient, but he did keep the offense on schedule and moving. And that was a Brett Hundley led offense. If he's the feature back with Aaron Rodgers back there, you're really going to get a value whether he's in an auction, whether he's in a redraft, he's probably going to come pretty cheap right now. So I've definitely been liking to avoid the middle tier of the running back position, come back in the later tiers there before you kind of get into the real scrubs later on. So I've been looking at drafts that way of like, I'm hitting running back maybe at the high end value, scooping in those, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth tier of wide receivers, and then coming back for the sixth, seventh, eighth tiers of running backs there. So I think trying to match your tiers to each with each individual position is the most valuable way to kind of approach that.
And if we didn't ask you where getting into those wide receivers, like who are some of the guys you're finding on your team over and over and over again in those later tiers?
You mean later tiers or kind of?
Well, like in the, as you're waiting to get back into running back. So you just mentioned you kind of like to slide into receivers and then skip that one tier of running backs. And then like who are you picking up in those, I guess, middling rounds?
Yeah, kind of in that, like, I guess, fourth, fifth, sixth round range. Drafting a lot of – I'm drafting a lot of Allen Robinson chalk.
Whoa, what a surprise.
Yeah, I know. That's a shocking thing. When you look at him around guys that he's typically going in, I think he has the ability to be a clear – you know, I'm just, again, looking at redraft, like, snake ADP. That fourth round is guys like – Juju Smith-Schuster, Alshon Jeffrey, Demaryius Thomas, Brandon Cooks, and then you get to Allen Robinson there. I think he has a chance to be the alpha on his team much more than any of those guys have a chance to be the alpha target hog on their own team. Right. So he kind of stands out in that tier to me as someone that could hit that 130, even 140. I mean, we've seen him hit 140, 150 targets before. I think he could be that player for a Chicago Bears offense that I expect to be rolling. I expect to be much, much better. I mean, everybody does. So yeah, he's a guy that stands out in that tier to me. Chris Hogan's a guy that I've gotten a lot of, just because I think he stands out as a player that's more proven than the rest of the options that the Patriots have at wide receiver with Edelman suspended early. Yeah. He's also somebody, again, thinking early into the season, he might get off to that hot start with Edelman gone, and then I can try to trade him after that. It's always tough to project, like, I can trade this guy, because then you're also thinking, like, everybody in my league is – I'm smarter than everybody in my league, which is not an advisable strategy. But someone that I do think could get off to that hot start, and then maybe you can deal later on. I find myself with a lot of Emmanuel Sanders, too. I mentioned Demaryius Thomas earlier. The fact that there's like three rounds of gap between their ADPs doesn't make a lot of sense. If Sanders is back healthy this year, I think he rebounds quite well. So that tier of guys for me, I'm generally going with kind of boring guys that I think are going to hit their target range, hit the range that I want to get them to. Like, again, that 120 target range. Those are the guys I'm typically taking and maybe avoiding sexier names. Although lately I got to say, I don't know, how do you guys feel about Sammy Watkins? Because I've started to draft him a little bit more, pick him up in those mid-tiers, but I don't know that I feel 100% confident in it.
Well, I can tell you on our consensus ranks right now, we have him at wide receiver 36. Blister, what are your thoughts on Sammy?
Well, you know, again, you read too much, listen too much, and everyone figures that just because they give him a big contract, he's going to get targets and everything. And that could be right, but until he actually goes out and really is the man for some team, I have no confidence in drafting him. So I'd rather let somebody else spend money on him.
Yeah. And in that range, Blister, you're looking, if I'm looking at our average auction values right now on the site, in that, $10-ish range, where Sammy's at $9 right now and we see is being too expensive. The value indicator is showing red, which is never good. But you can see guys in that range, if it's a Jamison Crowder, a Funchess, who else around $10? Chris Hogan right now, we have a $10. Are you picking any of those guys over Sammy?
I like Hogan and I like Crowder. For, you know, Funchess had a pretty damn good year last year, so I don't have the confidence that he could, you know, beat Sammy straight up, but still, those are the two guys I would take.
What do you, I find, Matt Funchess a polarizing player, this year. What are you thinking about him just heading into the season being the wide receiver guy?
Yeah, I think Funchess took a big, big step last year. Not just from a fantasy perspective, but just as an individual player, I think he won contested catches a lot better last year. You look at his reception results, some of the routes that he was really good on, you know, the deep post, the deep dig. Those are going to be staples of that Norv Turner offense. And I'm really excited about DJ Moore. I thought he was my favorite receiver from this past class. And I think you could connect those dots pretty well with, you know, the Panthers really like him. Obviously, they took him in the first round. You know, Norv Turner was out there looking like he was his third son at his pro day. I think that he's going to be a really good player. But Funchess could end up being a value this year if Moore gets off to a slow start. The tough part with that Carolina passing offense and why I haven't been aggressively drafting anybody from it is that it's typically a low volume passing game. I don't know that I expect it to suddenly jump up and be a top 15 in pass attempts offense. Even with Norv coming in, I still think they'll be pretty run based. Mm-hmm. And there's guys, you know, with McCaffrey, Olsen, Funchess, and DJ Moore, I think you could tell yourself a story. You could play out a scenario where any of those guys hits 100 targets, but there's no way that all four of them do. So it's tough for me to really get juiced on any of their ADPs. Moore obviously goes the latest of the group. Funchess, I think, goes in a – he is, like you said, he's very polarizing. In some drafts, he's going to go in that wide receiver 25 range. Others, he's going to drop down to, like, wide receiver 35. And when he gets into that range, I think I'm okay with him. But haven't found myself aggressively pursuing him. But I do think he took a really nice big step as an individual player last year. And I think I'm excited for his season this year. I just haven't been aggressively pursuing him in fantasy.
Okay. That makes sense. Absolutely. So if we're we just looked at some of the sweet spots at especially at the wide receiver. Who are some of those names that you think right now you're just not going to own? Not necessarily because you don't like them, Matt, but because they're just, the value isn't going to be there.
Yeah. I haven't drafted Juju Smith-Schuster once and I probably won't. And I don't know how I feel about that. Like, I don't know how confident I feel about that. When you look at him, where he's going in redraft leagues, I mean, he's like a top 20 receiver. People are definitely excited about him. I'm sure in auctions, he's someone that somebody's going to love him enough to bid him up. And I struggle with that. I mean, there's, like, we talked about some of those other guys, whether in that same tier as him, Alshon Jeffrey, Demaryius Thomas, Brandon Cooks. There's a scenario where those guys are the top targeted player on their team and a little bit more of an alpha. There's no scenario outside of Antonio Brown getting hurt or, you know, abducted by aliens where Juju Smith-Schuster is the number one targeted player on that team. And probably not even a scenario where he's number two because they have an elite pass catching back in Le'Veon Bell. So I have a tough time projecting the raw targets for Juju Smith-Schuster to be a great fantasy asset this year, or at least pay back that ADP. I really like James Washington, the rookie from Oklahoma State that they took. Yeah. I think he will be an upgrade on what Martavis Bryant was for them last year, in Pittsburgh. So as a deep threat, and I struggle to see Juju paying back that draft cost unless he continues to be uber efficient on a per target basis. And that typically does not hold up from year to year. So I have not been drafting him. He's been in a void for me. Brandon Cooks is always too expensive for where I would take him in fantasy. Same with guys like, you know, Corey Davis is one that I want to draft. He's another one that I feel like same with Funchess. Like there's people that like him enough to really take him higher than mm-hmm. where I would take him, but sometimes he does slip to a range in the kind of like mid to late seventh in a redraft league where I do end up taking him. So some of these guys, again, I haven't like X'd their names out completely other than players like Cooks and Smith-Schuster who never go in a range that I'd like them to go. But other guys, there's just a certain cutoff where I wouldn't pursue them. But sometimes they do fall to a place where I'd like to have them. And in auction, that's definitely plausible too, because values are so nebulous with what you're paying.
Absolutely. And I, just as I'm hearing all the background noise here, I haven't heard any sirens out of your background, Matt. Aren't you, typically in some sort of, hot water over there where there's, aren't you by a, fire hall or something?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's early yet, man. It's only 10 a.m. here on the West Coast.
Okay.
Most people haven't even woken up yet. You know, the typical West Coast stereotype is we're not even, you know, out of bed until 10 a.m. But don't worry, the fires will start soon.
Cause now you and I are recording outside in like my screened in gazebo and I got got the train blasting the horn there. And then my father-in-law cutting molding, I could hear the saw going off there too. So that, you might feel at home with background noise like that.
Yeah, right. Now, typically, I mean, there's like one of the apartments, and I can't wait to get out of this place I'm currently in. There's the place right across the alley from me is like renovating their entire balcony. And it's just like such a freaking nightmare that these guys have been out there, you know. I mean, I'm not here anymore during the day. Yeah. So my dog has to put up with it. But like, I think on Saturday morning, sometimes he'll be out there doing work. So I'm like, man, please don't start yet. I'm doing a podcast in here. Like,
yeah, exactly.
And they're out there all the time. And like, right, whatever, I pull my car out and I'm like, man, this is an inconvenience for me.
Absolutely.
So there's always noise out here in LA, yeah, for sure.
Blister, I just, as he brought up Juju on, I'm looking at our value indicator. It was a great name for him to bring up as a guy who's being overvalued, because on our list right now, we have him, he's going $11 more than he should based on his positional ranking. We have him down at 28, but he's getting drafted at $22, which puts him like more up in that, mid-range wide receiver two, like wide receiver 14 or 16. Like, is that where you think Juju should be? You have him ranked pretty low too, Blister.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little nervous about it. I do like James Washington coming in there as well, and I think we've seen before that Big Ben can find that third receiver. So they have a lot of talent on that squad. He had a great year last year. So he's just one of those guys I'm not completely comfortable with drafting where he's going or paying that much, obviously, in our situation.
Okay, so moving on to some more auction-specific questions, Matt, and just let me know. I know that you've done quite a few here. Is there any sort of nomination strategies, like when you're going in, especially in those early rounds, when it can be so – it can set the pace for your draft? Is there anything you do in an auction as far as nomination strategies go that our listeners could benefit from hearing?
Oh, hell yeah. And I'm definitely that guy that will nominate the players that I don't want. Try to get guys out there that you don't think that you think other people are higher on. You know, last year, again, Terrell Pryor was a great one that I knew I did not want, but I knew other people were excited about. You throw them out there kind of early-ish and people will maybe overspend. There's so much psychology here that with an auction draft that it's tough to gauge. Like it's not going to work every single auction.
Right.
Sometimes you will hook the fish there. Other times, like kind of another reverse psychology thing I like to do is nominate somebody that's way out of the tier, you know, that people are excited about bidding at the early start of it. And, you know, if you throw out, you know, I don't know, like a Chris Hogan type of player, somebody that you really want, and you throw them out in the early portions, people are like, I'm not spending on Chris Hogan right now. You might be able to get him at a value there because people are wanting to chase big fish there early. And if you throw out that kind of medium to small sized fish, they won't necessarily, you know, throw the line in after them. So that's definitely something I want to do. And always throw out expensive quarterbacks early because
right. You
will get people blowing big parts of their budget on quarterbacks. And again, in auction, it just makes no sense. I personally think to chase those big time quarterbacks, whether it's redraft or dynasty, because you're going to get values at the end. I mean, every single time it's going to be guys like Matt Stafford going for, you know, $5 to $4. And, you know, you can get low end quarterback one production from them and you don't have to be overly loyal in season. If there's somebody better on waivers, you go after them. So I like to just.
Absolutely.
Typically throw out guys that I don't want, whether it's high-end quarterbacks or people that I think others are too excited about. But I also will definitely throw out guys that I target early on, but aren't necessarily in that high tier to try to get people backing away from that maybe I can get them at a bit of a cheaper price. So there's a lot of different ways to play it, and it does all feel like a mind game sometimes, and that can totally backfire on you or it can totally go your way.
Right, you can overthink it, eh, Blister? Like, what are you thinking in the early rounds? What are some of the tips and tricks from Mr. Blister?
Well, I like throwing out guys I don't want as well, but you have to kind of keep an eye on your tiers because you only get to nominate one player every 12 or out of 12. And so if you have an eye in the tier, like we have an article on our site called The Auction U, and basically what we've found, obviously, is when you have a tier, say your top tier running backs right now, and some people might have even 8 in that tier, you know, the first couple guys out of that tier nominated, they're going to go for a lot of money. And then when it gets to the middle of it, some people will kind of hold their money because there's still a lot of guys left. But as it gets to the last couple of guys in the tier, then they get really expensive again. So if it's up to you to nominate and you can see you're almost at that point in a tier where there's only going to be a couple left, you want to get your guy out there sometime at that point so that hopefully you're getting him at a discount and not being in the bidding war at the end of that tier. So typically, if people don't have money to spend, then they're not a big threat. So as much money as you can get spent, I think the better off you are.
Yeah. Well, and I think that one of those names that, you know, we've just been talking about, Juju, I think he's an interesting guy to throw out fairly early because someone's going to be drinking the Kool-Aid, right? And you're going to hopefully milk those extra 10 or so bucks out of them from what you would pay. And I like that point too, Blister. It sets kind of the price point in the tier too, right? That you might not get back to for another 2 hours, but at least you kind of got an idea of where people's heads are at and you can get a little draft. Maybe their team construction too, right? If they're going to start balking on that tier or whatever. So what about at the end of a draft, Matt? There's always, techniques and tricks to try to scoop up your late round guys. What are you doing at the end of your draft for nominations?
Yeah, it's tough and it so much depends on how you've approached things earlier. I definitely subscribe to being a little bit more stars and scrubs heavy because that's part of the other advantage of auction is that you can build teams that would be absolutely impossible to build in a typical redraft league. Like if you want to overspend on two high end studs, you know, you want to overspend on an Antonio Brown and a David Johnson. I mean, it's possible to do so. It's going to probably hurt. In that scenario, then it's really trying to just be open to whatever happens at the end of a draft because you're going to be so restricted budget wise. I typically am not, I'm typically not somebody that has like a ton of money at the end of the at the end of the draft process. Because I don't like to leave I certainly do not like to leave the draft with any money on the table.
Nothing
because,
worse.
because you don't get to take that with you.
Right.
It's not like, all right, great. Well, they're going to cut me a $15 check. I left that on the table. That is annoying. So there I kind of try to keep a small budget around in case somebody is available that I really do want to bid on because there's always going to be value especially at these late wide receiver positions. And like right now, just taking taking a snake draft perspective to an auction, if you look at the wide receiver position just in typical snake leagues, like there are always guys in the 9th to 11th round range that I really want on my team. You know, whether it's Randall Cobb, Pierre Garçon, Allen Hurns, Cameron Meredith, you know, there are a ton of guys there. Rishard Matthews from Tennessee, Kenny Stills, you know, there are guys in that range that every time I get to the board, I'm like, man, I want to take these guys. Like they are players I'm excited about. They're players I think are going to outkick their average draft position just based on volume and projections and the situations that they're in. So taking that to an auction perspective, I definitely want to have some money around to get those guys or maybe prioritize them, like we said, late earlier in the draft, throw them out there when people aren't expecting these unsexy names to be bid and maybe get them for that discount there. Because those are guys I think are going to be really valuable fantasy players this year and keep myself around for sort of late round flyers at the running back position that I like and go with that nomination strategy there.
Right. Bliss, what about you at the end?
At the end of the draft?
Yeah.
Well, I load up on kickers.
We already had a pod, no kickers.
Well, yeah, at the end of the draft, in our typical auction, by the time it's getting near the end, some guys are in no shape to be drafting. So if we can just stay a little more awake than them, there can be some really good deals at the end of the draft.
Yeah.
So that's the key is just to be in the draft still.
Yeah, well, it'd be still being draft. And I like being in that position, at least for one player to be able to nominate him for $2 at the end of the draft, right? So then, you know, no one wants to go to three on that guy, you know? And then I hate at the end of the draft, though, where there's still that one guy in the tier, you know, like, let's say, Sterling Shepard's still sitting there and everyone knows he's there and everyone's got $10 or whatever it is waiting for him, thinking they're going to steal it. And who's going to be the, who's going to be the douchebag that's going to put him out there? And But that's always at the end of the drafts, too, which, you know, everyone must realize that guy's still on the board. You think you're the only guy until someone nominates him for $5 and you, oh, I thought it was the steal of the draft. Lister, do you have anything specifics you wanted to ask, too, while we got him here?
Well, I got you here, Matt. I got a few wide receiver, almost rapid-fire type questions, maybe small detail if you have them, but if you don't mind.
I'll try to be as rapid-fire as possible. I totally laugh, so.
Okay, well, that's okay. It doesn't matter. First of all, I got who do you like at wide receiver that isn't getting a lot of buzz right now?
I mentioned Keelan Cole earlier. He's somebody that I like. Josh Doctson is somebody that I've drafted in almost every team that I've done so far. He's somebody that, like, in typical years, I think would be a breakout candidate because he's young. He was kind of old for a rookie, but, you know, he's inexperienced in the NFL. Let's put it that way. And I really like this Washington offense. Like, I've been targeting the cheaper players, and that's the good part is that they're all kind of inexpensive right now. You know, the running backs aren't. I haven't been really drafting Geis or even Chris Thompson, but if you look at the pass catchers, you know, Jamison Crowder is the most expensive one. I haven't really drafted him as much, but Paul Richardson and Josh Doctson are very inexpensive right now. You know, they're going in the double digit rounds of drafts, and I still like Doctson an awful lot because last year, he definitely looked like just a deep jump ball specialist, but he did have some good success on deep patterns as well. But if you look at his TCU reception perception, he was a guy who got separation on all routes, you know, was a dominant contested catch receiver, but I think can do a little bit more than that. So if somebody's going to be the alpha wide receiver one on this team, I think it is going to be Doctson. And the fact that he's so cheap, I mean, yeah, there are plenty of concerns there. For sure, but the fact that he's so cheap, I don't really care. You know, he ends up as my fourth or fifth wide receiver, and if it doesn't work out, you know, send him packing. But, yeah, he's definitely somebody that I don't think is getting a lot of attention right now, but the hype season could build him up, so I'm going to continue to take that discount while I can.
Right on. Yeah. And my big, I guess, love is with Pierre Garçon this year for some reason. Never has been before, but he ends up on a lot of my teams right now.
Yeah, I'm with you on Garçon. I think that he's still really good. He had a good year last year before he got hurt, missed the Jimmy Garoppolo era completely.
Yeah.
And I think he still takes that, you know, top flanker X receiver role in that offense. And I really like the way that sets up for him. Jimmy Garoppolo is another one, kind of the reverse of what we were talking about with Eli Manning earlier, where in this scenario, the quarterback is expensive. Everybody wants a piece of Jimmy Garoppolo, but all his pass catchers are cheap outside of Jerick McKinnon. So unless you think Jerick McKinnon is going to be a 1,000-yard receiver as a running back, so one of these guys like Garçon, Goodwin, you know, George Kittle, whatever, one of these guys is really going to outkick their ADP, and I think I'm with you that I think it's Garçon.
And Jimmy G, I mean, talking about getting a piece, we can – That's he's doing okay from the looks of it.
Hey, last year there was a lot of hype with Kenny Golladay, and this year there's been some rumblings, but not as much. Do you see Kenny Golladay taking the next step? And if so, does that hurt the targets or to Golden Tate or Marvin Jones at all?
He's cheap enough where that I'm fine with taking Golladay in those double digit rounds. There's always somebody I like better. So he hasn't ended up on a bunch of my teams. I think it's just tough with two established players like Golden Tate and Marvin Jones. It's tough to dole out the targets he's going to need on a weekly basis to be really relevant in fantasy. And I definitely liked the flashes that I saw last year, but looking at his reception perception, there's definitely good success rate on some of the deep routes and even some of the more shallow ones, but not enough to the point where I'm really convinced he's going to break out this year. He's a player I like but don't love, and I haven't really let him stop me from drafting, you know, Marvin Jones or Golden Tate. But there's so much target kind of variance in that offense right now that I haven't drafted really any one of them. And if anything, the fact they have no tight end right now to speak of.
Wilson. Oh, sorry.
Right. No, he's Canadian. He's Canadian too. So I don't want to mess your guys' vibe up there. So they do have a tight end, Luke Wilson. You're right. But he's there. But the fact that Ebron is gone, they didn't really bring in like a high end replacement is someone that I think could speak well for Galladay and still have the receivers hold their target value.
Right on. Here's another one for you. Tyrell or Mike Williams?
Neither, but I think Mike Williams could take the next step, I guess. I mean, he really hasn't taken a first step so much in the NFL yet. I haven't really been drafting either. Tyrell Williams, I think, is legitimately good, and I kind of wish he would be on another team because I'm not sure that the current Chargers coaching staff thinks he's good.
Right.
So I haven't really been drafting either one of them. But I think that Mike Williams, if the team is really insistent on making him a thing, then I think he could step up and at least be like a solid complement to Keenan Allen. But don't really have a strong stance on either one of them. Just kind of they're one that like whoever comes out of the preseason and training camp process, looking like they're going to be the established number two, then I'll be on that player. But right now I don't really have like a strong stance on either one.
I
hear you. How about this one? Calvin Benjamin doesn't get talked about at all right now, but he should be the wide receiver one, or Geronimo Allison, who should be getting wide receiver two looks in Green Bay. Do you think Calvin outproduces Geronimo, and does Calvin get 120 targets?
Yeah, I mean, almost no scenario where Calvin Benjamin doesn't get 120 targets on that team right now. But you're just never going to want to play him. Like that's, again, thinking about drafting teams like in season, I understand the appeal to Kelvin Benjamin. I mean, if there's any appeal, there's almost no appeal. But like, I understand the logic behind taking Kelvin Benjamin, and I have in a few best ball leagues because then I'm not going to have to do that exercise where I have to stomach playing him.
Right.
He's gonna produce. I mean, he's a good enough NFL player that he can go out there, get 120 targets and catch 70 of them, you know, which isn't great, but yeah, that's probably what you're looking at. In an offense where there's just nothing else to speak of there on a team that's probably going to be bad and game script is going to dictate that they throw a lot. So he's somebody that I don't want to draft, but at some point you got to kind of hold your nose and do it. Even though in season, you're probably never going to want to play him.
No, you talked about Allen Robinson in Chicago, and from some of the information and research I've got, they have the best strength of schedule for wide receivers. Can Kevin White actually show up this year?
So I think there's like a non-0% chance that happens. But there you go. Anything you get from him, you got to look at it as just gravy. And the team has definitely spoken with their actions that they're doing anything but counting on him.
Right.
Obviously drafting Allen or taking Allen Robinson in free agency. They trade up to get Anthony Miller, who's a prospect that I really like, is like a Doug Baldwin type of slot receiver. Taylor Gabriel can bring an explosive element. He's not somebody that I'm super excited on for fantasy because it's just tough to give him the targets with everybody else that's there. You know, they have Trey Burton, who's going to kind of play like a big slot hybrid tight end sort of role. And then you get to Kevin White, and it's like, all right, buddy, if you could do anything, that's great. So I would say non-0% chance, but maybe 0.5.
There you go. And hey, on that note, just you're talking about Anthony Miller, like, who's the who are a couple of the rookies right now that you think could have any sort of impact this year in a redraft?
Yeah, Miller's one for sure, because I think he could be the second most targeted receiver on that team outside of Allen Robinson. I like Taylor Gabriel as kind of a gadget Z receiver, but don't think that I think Miller is going to own that slot receiver role in three wide receiver sets, and we know with the Chiefs, where Matt Nagy came from, they use spread concepts almost more than anybody else in the league. So I think Miller's going to be on the field a ton. Other than him, Michael Gallup is somebody that I'm looking at late for sure, because I think there's, you know, nothing really established at the Cowboys receiver core. I'm excited to be out there at their training camp in a couple weeks to hopefully try to spot where he's being used on the field, how many reps he's getting, for sure. But I draft Allen Hurns a lot too, cause he's always super value. He's a super value and a guy who I think that I think could excel in sort of a role where they move him around a little bit. But I think Gallup and Miller are guys I have my eye on late. I haven't really drafted DJ Moore yet, even though I think there's a solid argument for him. And that's pretty much the only three that I'm interested in this year.
Yeah. And typically, rookie wide receivers, we're not pushing their values up the board at all. Typically, I had a laugh last night. I was with some old high school buddies, and it was early in the wee morning, and I was, going into the bathroom. I mentioned something about somebody making money. We hadn't talked to football all night, and all of a sudden my buddy yells while he's half prone on the couch with a beer in his hand, "You know who's going to make me a lot of money this year is Kiki Kute." And while like I spit my beer across the room, like of all names to throw out, we hadn't talked anything about football. We're in a dynasty. We left all that shelved, and that was the first round of football talk was Kiki. So I had a good laugh about that. Nice. The boys will be laughing when they listen back to the pod, because it was a good laugh. And so then I wanted to make a point of remembering to bring that up to Blister and Slim today. So I did a speech to text on my phone to our group chat so that I could remember it. And yeah, it doesn't read nearly A, as funny as it was, and B, does it make any sort of sense? And the boys woke up this morning and saw that text, and they're like, what?
That's amazing. He's somebody to definitely look at too. I mean, if the Texans, Deshaun Watson's another one that his value's up there super high. And obviously you have Nuke Hopkins, and you have Will Fuller's going in a range where I'm probably never going to draft him, but he's up there.
He's up there.
Yeah. But then nobody else is really on the radar. If Watson's going to lead an explosive high end offense, we're going to be interested in Kiki Cutie, some of the tight ends they drafted, Bruce Ellington, and the running backs too, Lamar Miller. And if Dante Foreman's healthy, he's definitely an intriguing late round pick, but it sounds like he's probably not going to be healthy. Yeah. Kiki Cutie is definitely somebody that could own like a deep threat slot receiver role, that team definitely needs, filling. And when I talked to Deshaun Watson a couple weeks ago, out at a shoot here, he mentioned him. So there's at least that he's somebody he's excited about. So.
Like, who do we talk to that says, "Oh yeah, when I was talking to Deshaun Watson"?
He also has a nice moonwalk, I'll tell you that too.
Oh yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. All right, so we're well past the hour mark here, and I know you probably have way more important things to do than to talk to a couple guys from Canada. What do we have going forward for Matt Harmon? Where can we find you? What should people be looking for?
Yeah, well, you can always get access to my reception perception work at receptionperception.com. It's a part of the Fantasy Footballers Ultimate Draft Kit, as you mentioned up on the top. You get access to over 50 profiles on wide receivers, all their route data across the league on success rate versus coverages, what routes they're running the best, and more guys are going to be added to it. Some of these sleeper guys that we've talked about here, right. You know, Doxton, Keelan Cole, I'll be adding them over the next couple of weeks, and looking to bring some of that content to Yahoo as well. So definitely keep an eye out on that. And, you know, I'll be out there on the internet, man, you know, doing whatever it is I do.
And click the links because it pays the bills.
Click the links because it pays the bills. That's right. That's right. That's right.
All right. Well, awesome. Just want to say, thanks, Matt, for coming on. It's, amazing for us when we have, someone with let's even just say a check mark beside your lane, let alone that can say that when I was talking to AB the other day, it means a lot to us that, you take the time to come on our little pod. So, thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, my pleasure. You know, it's been fun being tight with you guys for a while now. I mean, like I said, it's crazy to think that, you know, back when I first came on your guys' pod is when I was getting ready to move across the country to start the NFL.com job, and now I'm somewhere else. And it's been a fun ride, and I really appreciate all the support. So thanks, guys. So I appreciate you having me on.
Hey, thanks for coming on. And remember to tell Evans if he needs a supply teaching job, we can always hook him up.
Yeah, we need teachers here. So,
well, yeah,
after we pay after well in Canada out. Too.
After I push him out, you know, of Yahoo, then I'll send him your way.
Yeah, I know a couple of Shanes up there in Canada that can help you out. So. All right, well, I guess we'll see you on Twitter, Matt, and I'm looking forward to seeing some reports from Cowboys camp as a Cowboys fan myself. Mr. Blister, I will see you in a couple of days in a pickup truck heading down for our 10th annual golf trip. And for the rest of you, I'll see you when it's springtime in the Rockies.
When it's springtime in the Rockies, I'll be coming back to you.